Thank you for downloading episode 300 of We Got This with Mark and Hal. We did it. Oh, did you hear that music? That is
Look at these balloons. Oh, there's balloons falling.
We did it. Oh, these balloons are everywhere. This can't be good to the environment. They're going to pop at some point. We're going to have to throw them out.
That's fair. Thank you for listening to this episode. Before we get started, we wanted to let you know about our special holiday show coming up on December 10th at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern time on HouseSeats.live. It is our We Got This public domain holiday spectacular.
That's right. We've got a clean slate of topics suggested by you. Those are being gathered as we speak, as we record this for you on our Facebook group. And we have a very special guest. You know, we can't do a holiday episode without her. The great Paget Brewster will be joining us to adjudicate some clean slate topics submitted by you, the listeners.
That's right. You know her. You love her. We love her even more than you do, people of the world. And we are very excited to have Paget back on the show. And we've got some musical guests and we've got some really fun surprises that our producer Ken Plume has been working on. One in particular, I think you're really going to get a kick out of. So yeah, join us December 10th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific on HouseSeats.live.
That's right. Ticket sales benefit Lyft, which empowers families to break the cycle of poverty. Some of our guests include the Double Clicks, Mike Furman, who created our theme song, and the wonderful Open Mike Eagle. And that's just a sample of what you're going to get when you come to our show. So enjoy some comedy, some music, an old-time holiday special, and raise money for great charity while doing it. Go to HouseSeats.live right now. Well, yeah, we'll wait.
Okay, did you do it?
Yeah, you did it, right?
They definitely did it.
Great. Enjoy this episode of We Got This with Mark and Hal.
Hello, I'm Hal Lublin.
And I'm Mark Gagliardi.
Since the dawn of humanity, one issue has gone unsettled. With the fate of the world in the balance, we're here to settle once and for all. Episode 300, Mailbag Questions.
That's right. Don't worry, everyone. We got this.
Podcasts should have a theme song. Podcasts should not have a theme song. Yes, they should. No, they shouldn't. They sound good. Yeah, but people are just going to skip past it.
You know what?
You're right. We got this.
Mark, congratulations. Who knew when we started
did it.
This? Almost 6 years ago.
I know. Oh, brother, this is very exciting.
It's crazy to think that we've made it this far.
Yeah.
That we did it. And that I'm guessing you weren't aware that we were this close to 300. I definitely wasn't.
No, I knew that we were up high up in the 200s, but I guess it makes sense if we do one a week and we've been going for almost 6 years, man.
Yeah. In fact, by that math, shouldn't we have hit episode 300 a long time ago? I don't know. Oh, wait, hold on. I'm not going to do math for this episode. We started in March. I thought we started on January 1st and we did it then.
No, we started in March because I remember we started right around the time that Thrilling Adventure Hour ended.
That's right.
So
we murdered it live during an episode. Oh, you're going to pop.
Right.
Oh, okay, please.
Hey, I don't know how that sounded.
Is that a bottle of soda?
It is. So here's what I've been doing for those who are curious. If you enjoy beer and you also have a soda stream at home,
oh Lord,
buy yourself Grolsch beer, because after you're finished with the beer, they have these tops that you can reattach that seal really nicely. So they're perfect for soda water.
When do you think that this is the type of top, for those of you who can't see it, which is all of you, unless you're hallucinating, if you're on a peyote trip in the desert and you're able to see podcasts, congratulations.
Grolsch looks like,
yeah.
There might be fewer of those than people who are currently on ayahuasca or peyote.
It's that thing of like a ceramic or plastic top, and it's got a metal ring through it, and there's another metal ring, so you're actually like, you're turning the metal ring on top to seal it in place. I'm doing a terrible job. If I had to go to the patent office, it would be rejected the second
describing. Just imagine any bottle that's on a shelf at a Cracker Barrel.
Right. All of those bottles.
They all look like, yeah.
When do you think that technology started? I don't have an answer. I know you don't have an answer. I saw you look over where your computer screen is to see if you could look it up.
No, I didn't. You're on my computer screen.
I have
so many screens in front of me right now. It's ridiculous. I do feel a little bit like Tony Stark. Here's the thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to, because I have a bunch of like, you know, just remotes and a million things with buttons on my desk.
Right.
I wanted to build like a proper Starship control panel. where everything fits into it.
Uh-huh.
And like these, but this little panel of buttons here, nobody has to know that it's just a remote sitting inside a little cradle with a shell over the top of it. It just looks like a number panel of buttons and this little dial and this, but come on, how cool would that be to have a desk that looked like a spaceship?
Yeah, nobody, it would be amazingly cool, and nobody would have to know it was just the Staples easy button five times. Nobody would have to know.
I'm, you know what? That's what they use Ken, cut this out. What's the name of that show? What's the name of that show? The one that Seth, what's his name, makes? Oh my God, I'm turning into that, my mother who's like, well, who's the name of the guy on the show that I like?
Perry Como?
Seth MacFarlane.
Family Guy?
Oh, forget it.
Oh, the space show. I don't remember, and we'll never, you know what? That will be the great mystery of this show, is we will never, ever utter the name of that television program ever.
We will never look it up. We will never.
Never. And by the way,
all of these ways to look things up directly in front of me.
This is a tangent within a tangent. I'm just wondering how old you think that bottle cap technology is.
The Orville.
Damn it.
I didn't look it up. It popped in my brain.
We didn't even make it to episode 301 and the vow was broken. What on earth?
Yeah, look, Hal, this show is all about breaking rules, man. That's what we do.
It's true.
We're renegade pirate radio, baby.
Since you don't want to answer, I'm just going to say I think that,
what was your
question? Bottle cap. I'm wondering how old you think that bottle cap technology is.
Oh, probably older than Orville Redenbacher.
We decided to do something special for our 300th episode. I feel dirty.
I feel like that technology is the same age as the technology that put rivets on Levi Strauss's jeans.
Sure.
That's my guess.
Or the foot measuring device that looks like it was made for, it just looks like a lot of things that would be at the Kellogg Sanitarium.
That, along with their invention of cornflakes as a digestif.
That's right. It was an accident. It was an accident. They were trying to make crackers and they messed it up. Anyway, what we did for, I think we did this for our 5-year anniversary. We did
a
mailbag, I think. I can't remember the last time we did it. Ken is on this call, but muted, and we will not allow him to give us the answer. We're doing this. This is off the top of our head. We did a mailbag segment for a special episode and people really responded to it. And we thought it would be fun to take our 300th episode to answer some of your questions, both about the show and about us, and just sort of talk and let you behind the wizard's veil.
As
You're going to meet the man behind the curtain. So I want to kick this off.
And also the boy behind the curtain. Hal is the man behind the curtain. I'm the boy behind the curtain.
I have two questions from Donna White. I'm going to lead off with those.
All right.
Donna asks, how has the show changed since it started? And what do you wish you'd known at the beginning?
I think that we feel freer. Tell me if you think I'm way off on this.
No, we may have different opinions, but I'm interested to hear what your answer is.
I feel like at the beginning, I was so hyper-focused on just staying to the topic.
Right.
And I think fairly early on, we realized that sticking to the topic, just the absolute letter of it, as if we were working as real experts in some sort of an academic panel about this, was not nearly as fun as just figuring out what Hal did that day. And you know what I mean? Like, part of it is that first 5 minutes of a morning talk show where before they get to any of the pre-planned segments, they just BS for a while. And I love that.
I agree with you. I think it took us a while to break out of, you know, we'd both come from doing Thrilling Adventure Hour, so there was a performative aspect to it. But I think we knew, or at least I knew, that I really wanted it to be conversational, that it was about the topic. And I think there's fun in debating it because people have opinions about any and everything that we discuss, including us. But the fun of it is for them to feel like they're hanging out with us. If you're yelling at your phone when we're discussing something, or you feel the need to write us afterwards, that means we did our job because we got you engaged and you were interested in it. And it's a conversation that you would like to have. And I think that's aside from production wise, figuring out why does Mark sound compressed, because we were recording Skype calls, and Ken really deserves the credit for a lot of that and how we sound. We're going to talk a little bit about, in fact, Sarah Larson asked. I just want to roll this into that.
Hold on a second. I want to add one more thing before
go ahead.
That. One more wonderful surprise for me was the community that it created. I thought we would just be talking to each other about these things. You mentioned the people of the world and the people want to yell at their phones and talk about it and get engaged online with the Facebook group afterward. That has been such a pleasant surprise for me that we're starting civil conversations, civil debates, which was always the goal for us to have them. So it's fun that other people are jumping in the game and having fun too.
100%, 100%. And in that line, this is all related to that. Mm-hmm. Don asked, what do you wish you'd known at the beginning? And a lot of that I think is technological. I'm okay with, and I assume you're also okay with, Mark, that we are constantly maybe making little tweaks to the format. We're willing to experiment, but it sort of is what it is. At its core, and we embrace that and are always willing to try to build off of it. But, you know, we like what it is. So I think we had that kernel from the beginning, but technologically there's been a lot to learn. And Sarah asked, how did Kate McManus and Ken Plume get involved with the show? Well, Ken has been a dear friend for, I think Ken and I met, I want to say it was 8 years ago. We first met face to face at South by Southwest and hit it off and just became great friends as a result of that. And when we were starting the podcast, he was very encouraging. He was instrumental in getting everything set up just from an advice standpoint, and then in listening to it and giving his feedback, and then offering at a certain point he started by just mastering it, saying, I'm willing to master it. I did all of the editing. And then eventually, as we joined Max Fun, it became more, he was still producing at that point, but just took on more and more responsibility. And it wouldn't be the show that it is and that it has been at any point without him.
So yeah, absolutely. Ken's the silent voice, the silent third voice of the show.
Absolutely. And then Kate, we had met Kate, I think in Chicago. I think she came to the C2E2 show. Mm-hmm. She had been a fan of Thrill Adventure Hour and then started listening to We Got This. And she
was like, you idiots are wrong about a lot of stuff.
Well, she works as a librarian. And so she has a lot of experience researching and she just volunteered. So I'll email her. Sometimes I will email her. Sometimes I won't, depending on how quickly a topic comes up from suggestion to us recording it. We'll get into that a little bit more, but that is how she became involved. We're actually going to hear from Kate in a little bit about what goes into the research for an episode. I'm going to jump back to Donna, who asks, is there an idea, topic, bit, or personal story from an episode that has surprised you with its popularity among the people of the world? What do we mention the most? Spite pretzels, shower pie, coffee filter, toilet paper. These are some things that come up over and over again.
There are certain details about your life and my life that are such wonderful insights into who we are, both good and bad, as people, in our strengths and our weaknesses. And I think the discussion about having a beer in the shower versus having a pie in the shower is one of those that just resonates so wonderfully. And also, man, people got really obsessed when I went over my toilet paper list. Yeah. I don't know if I've given the toilet paper list in a while. For those who don't know,
bring it back.
I'm going to bring this back. I always had a tendency for years to not remember to go and buy toilet paper when I would be out. I think I'm on my last roll now. I got to remember to do that today, because there is a hierarchy, I think, of things that you use for toilet paper by necessity. And it starts with toilet paper, obviously, and then Kleenex, because if you have any Kleenex around. But if you have Kleenex, or usually you're using toilet paper as Kleenex because you don't have Kleenex around. It's not the other way around. And then paper towels are next down on the list. And if there are no paper towels, then a little further down, there's a big step drop in this, is coffee filters, the basket kind, not the cone kind, because those have sharp edges. And then a little further down from that is notebook paper, crumpled up and then reopened and then crumpled up and then reopened and then crumpled up and then reopened, so that it gets a little softer. And then further down from there, if I don't inexplicably have any notebook
paper. Hold on. I thought you were going to say, not only can you wipe with it, but it will tell you your future because you keep opening and closing it.
Yeah, it's like a dream. What are those called? Cootie catchers?
Yeah. What is the number of times that you wipe? Okay, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, you get it. Hal gets me.
I'm going to own an island.
Yeah. And then,
go ahead.
I missed
bottoming
one.
The list.
I missed one. it's not even bottom of the list. It is most proximitous on the list, which is, I'm going to say it, the tube itself.
Oh, Lord.
The toilet paper tube itself.
I'm not going to get pulled into this. I'm not going to, not in episode 300. I'm going to resist because I have so many questions here that I think are so great. We didn't even get to all of the questions that were asked. But, mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't even get them all in the
show. Sorry, I took up so much time with my toilet paper list.
I don't think people mind. For me, it would be the Spike pretzels, which you bring up. That is something that is mentioned almost all the time. Oh, there are things that come back. There are definitely things that come back and are mentioned, but the pretzels mm-hmm. really seems to bother people because it wasn't as much a decision as us just spiting one another into pretzels.
You and I both just became so intractable in my case, correct choice of what the shape of a pretzel is. Okay. And in your case, your highly biased regionalism of what a pretzel looks like. And we were just intractable on that. And we wound up choosing the pretzel rod as the best pretzel shape, which it might still actually technically be. Mm-hmm.
See? Okay. Moving on. I'm going to go. Some of these are show related. Some of these are just general. I think this is a good one for you, Mark, more than me, although I could certainly answer it. Sandy Page asks, what was the weirdest thing you've ever seen slash experienced at Disneyland?
The weirdest thing I've ever seen or experienced at Disneyland. I mean, I worked there for 9 years. So I've seen some stuff. Let me think about this.
Is it the Mickey's Butthole Show?
It's the Mickey's Butthole Show.
The Magical Butthole.
You know what? I'll give you an example of a show misfire.
Okay.
Surprising moment. Mm-hmm. And then I'll give you an example of a thing that really, really touched me and surprised me.
Great.
So here's a show misfire. There's a scene in Aladdin, a musical spectacular, where Jafar makes the genie appear and the genie's in the shower is the bit. The genie's mm-hmm. got like a scrub brush and is singing in the shower and like he's caught off guard. That's the bit. And then the genie screams and throws the brush over his shoulder off the stage. I am holding in this scene the lamp and the brush, and I appear and I've got the lamp in my hand and take the lamp from Jafar, and I'm holding the scrub brush is the bit. And I'm scrubbing. And, I see Jafar and I shriek and I throw the lamp over my shoulder off stage. Now this is Aladdin's magic lamp. I have just thrown off the stage. I realize in this moment that there is absolutely no chance that the audience didn't realize what I had just done, and also no chance that we could continue the show otherwise. So I had to embrace it, and I just turned to the crowd and I said, I'm going to be honest with you. I just threw the wrong prop off stage. I will be right back. And I turned to the actor playing Jafar and I said, Jafar, stay right where you are. I looked at the stage, said, everybody hold. I'm just going to go get the prop that I threw off stage that was the wrong prop. And I made it so giantly overblown. And then when I came back, I was very excited because it's the scene where I try to make Jafar laugh and he was already laughing at this point.
That's fantastic.
I'll tell you a very heartwarming story that made me very happy. We had a wonderful woman working in the park by the name of Mary Poppins. Mary Poppins was Mary Poppins at Disneyland.
Practically perfect in every way.
Practically perfect in every way. And sure. Mary Poppins met a special needs kid once who was there, a Make-A-Wish kid. And this is how wonderful Mary Poppins is. This Make-A-Wish kid, all that they wanted to do was ride on the carousel with Mary Poppins, because that's what she does in the movie, is they ride on a carousel. So Mary Poppins turns to every character has a character lead, and the character leads answer to the manager of that department. Mary Poppins turned to her lead and said, get me the manager. Got the manager on the phone and said, every character that is out meeting people in the park right now, this kid just touched her heart so much that she did this. She said, every character that's in the park right now, get everyone to the carousel. So not only did this kid get to ride the carousel with Mary Poppins, this Make-A-Wish kid got to ride the carousel with every single, there was not a horse empty on that carousel, and there was no one on that carousel except that kid and Disney characters. And that was one of those moments that was just pretty magical.
That's unreal. And then at the end of the ride, you heard the as all the characters
and all the horses, like they escaped, they dispersed from the carousel. No one has seen Piglet since.
Well, that was his chance. He always wanted to see what Anaheim was like.
Yeah.
Eli Wright asks, how many episodes do you typically record at a time, and how frequently do you record? Well, this is, Eli, this is a great question. This is our first time recording together since, I believe, was it August that you went to
go film? Yeah, we banked a ton of shows.
We banked enough episodes in September. We banked enough episodes through, I would say, like beginning / middle of September that we were covered through to this episode that you are listening to now, which releases on the 8th of December in the evening here on the West Coast, was recorded on Sunday the 6th. Remember. The 8th of December. So we are now in the process of rebanking episodes. We try to get two at a time. Any more than that is not that we don't enjoy each other's company, but it gets a little difficult to sustain. You still need to sustain energy. We're still talking. Yes, it's a conversation we're having, but we're aware that people are listening and we want it to be entertaining for them. And then how frequently? We try to do it at least once every 2 weeks, if not once a week, when we're really trying to bank.
Which is great because also it, in the times of COVID when everyone's stuck at home, it gives me an excuse to shoot the breeze with Hal. That's really the main thing about this is, you know, friends come in and out of your life. And not that I'm worried that Hal and I would ever not be in one another's lives, but this is we are sitting down once a week and we are having a conversation, the two of us, just because we are absolutely delighted by one another. And we're lucky that people want to listen to it.
Absolutely.
I wasn't waiting for you to agree. There was a brief pause there. I didn't like look into the camera and go, right, Hal?
I'm going to guess this is one we have the same answer to, by the way. This is from Jenna Yamada.
Hi, Jenna.
The great Jenna Yamada, who we've known for many years.
Yes.
Jenna writes, wow, 300. Congratulations. If you could visit the set of any TV show from your childhood, what would it be and why? 1, 2, 3. Mr. Rogers'
Neighborhood. You can't do that on television.
What?
Oh, yes, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
No. Would yours be, you can't do that on television because
I was thinking in the moment. I think so. I was thinking about that show. For those who don't know, you can't do that on television. It was a sketch show in the early 80s from Canada that was all kids. But yeah, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is like, that's just, it's the land of make believe. It's Fred Rogers. You get to sit and hang out with Fred Rogers. Also, the show, you can't do that on television. I was just thinking how excited that show made me when I was a kid.
Sure.
But also the kids are in deep, deep peril on that show. There's a firing squad.
Yeah.
There's a dungeon. Mm-hmm. There's terrible, terrible food from Barth.
Yeah.
A home life that is really, really problematic.
Yeah. If you go to Blip's Arcade, he's constantly trying to cheat you out of money.
Yeah. It was, I guess now that I think about it, the world I would love to live in is the world of Mr. Rogers.
Yeah, I would just love to see those sets. I know that they're put together, but it's so pleasing to look at. And that I remember of all the shows that I watched as a kid was the place I wanted to visit and be the most. I loved Sesame Street, but it was like Scorsese's New York outside, whatever they showed. Like the kid taking his llama to the dentist or going around the corner to it, like Hell's Kitchen to go get some milk and butter and eggs. Like that was not.
Meanwhile, on Mr. Rogers, there was live jazz.
Exactly.
All that music was done live.
It was. And perfectly. Oh, so
amen.
Good.
You're right. Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood is the correct answer. Asked and answered.
Asked and answered. Kathleen Cashman asks, favorite place you've recorded an episode? Please, not Hal's car. Crying laughing emoji.
I think on an airplane. We recorded an episode. We recorded the episode Window Seat or Aisle Seat on an airplane. Was it between New Zealand and Australia?
We were flying from Australia to New Zealand.
Yeah. That, I think, was my favorite location that we've ever recorded.
That was pretty great. I think I have to go with the backseat of my car only because the circumstances are great, which is you had locked yourself out of your place. But also it added a dimension to those episodes. I remember one of them was like Netflix versus Hulu versus Amazon Prime or streaming versus watching TV live. But the topics didn't even matter. It was really about the fact that we were trapped in a hot car in the valley trying to get through the episode. Like, we've got to finish this episode before one of us passes out on a heat stroke.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. Josh Coyle is another question about behind the scenes or BTS.
We are zipping through these questions. I'm so used to one question taking an hour to answer.
Ken said we can only do an hour this week.
Okay.
Because we have our show. We have our lives.
Sorry I was so long-winded about Disneyland.
You're forgiven. Josh Coyle asks, how much time passes between recording and posting? It depends. In the case of every episode you've heard leading up to this one, it was recorded in somewhere in August or September. So it took a while, which is why things that were happening in the world, we didn't really record about. Like I recorded a lot of other podcasts around the election, and you hear a very different Hal in those episodes than you hear what we recorded earlier this year, because I was at a different emotional place at that point.
Yeah.
So now we're real time. I like when they're a little bit closer to release when we record them, but it's also good to have a lead and not feel the pressure to get one in the can, because, you know, sometimes life gets in the way and one or the other of us can't record at a specific time.
Yeah. I like to think of us as, it's like bagpipes. You know, you can fill that big old bladder up with air and then you make the music. So you fill the bladder with air and then you make the music. The bladder's always got to have some air in it to make the music. We sometimes fill it way super full of air. Sometimes we just get a little bit of air in there because we only know we're about to drop a week's worth of music of bagpipes. Yeah.
What? What?
I lost you for a minute, Hal.
I've gone.
Just as long as our air bladder is always full, I think that's
right.
Important.
The
look, we haven't recorded in a while. I'm rusty.
We will forever whine like a bladder full of air being pushed out through a series of pipes. Yeah, what is Furman doing the bagpipe version of our theme?
Oh my god. Sorry about that, everybody.
Ashley Gillard has a question about you and I, a personal question.
Ooh.
Which is, how did we meet? Do you remember the first time we met?
No. It was like 20 years ago.
I remember, because it was within a week of you arriving to LA.
That's right.
Eric Edelstein and I, multiple time guest, went through Second City together out here in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And when you're going through, especially when you're young and getting into improv and sketch, you will perform anywhere you can. So Eric was like, you and I and a couple of other people, we're going to go perform at the Next Stage, which was an upstairs theater in a strip mall on La Brea Avenue, just north of Hollywood, above Moshdi Malone's Ice Cream.
Yeah. It is a not place north of Hollywood, north of Hollywood Boulevard.
North of Hollywood Boulevard, yeah. And it is not there anymore. And there's a good reason, because nobody was at our show except for Mark, was the only person, I think, in the audience. You had met Eric. Did you know Eric ahead of time?
I had met Eric when we were working at, so I met Eric through Rob Adler, who was my roommate when I first
moved. Also in my class.
Yeah. So he was sort of a DePaul connection that linked everybody. You guys were all working at Second City together. I knew I wanted to get involved with Second City. There was one night at Dimples where I met a few people. I don't think you were there that night. No.
No.
So this was at the Next Stage. You guys were doing a show there. And I remember one phrase that periodically pops into my head, one highly inappropriate phrase, but it made me laugh in the moment, which at some point someone, it might have been you, Hal, used the phrase Flintstein's Jewable Vitamins. And that phrase, was that you?
Could have been. I don't remember.
But that phrase stuck in my head. I was like, that is the dumbest funny thing I've heard in a while. And I also did shows at that theater, not at the Next Stage. That was the Big House that had a couple people in the audience.
Door.
I did it at the theater next door, the Trey Stage.
Yes.
Which I did a show there and I invited a girl that I liked. Me and some buddies were doing an improv show. I was like, I got an improv show with my friends. Come see the show. And she was the only person in the audience. Yeah. So if you're starting out in comedy, just know you will definitely have some shows where there is one person in the audience.
It's kind of like the battle scar that all improvisers and sketch performers and comedians, like any kind of performer, like doing a show for hardly anybody in the audience where the cast outnumbers the audience. Lord knows I did that for years.
Oh, yeah.
Years. It takes a long time. So if you're a young performer or a performer who's just starting, have patience and keep
doing
going.
It. Yeah.
Okay.
And just know that some of the shows, you're going to do some of the funniest stuff you've ever done and one or two people will see it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the story you told me, which I don't think is even your story, also from Disneyland, about the guy who played guitar in New Orleans Square, who during a break was like, I just played the greatest lick of my entire life. And then afterwards, a mother walked up and asked me where the bathroom is.
Oh, that's Ernie. Rest in peace, Ernie. He was the last employee of Disneyland that was hired by Walt Disney himself. And I, one of the treats of my job was getting to watch Ernie play jazz live from a stool in New Orleans Square. Amazing.
Unreal. But yeah, we knew each other. We were kind of in one another's orbit for years. We were different. Mm-hmm. I finished Second City ahead of Mark, but I was at Mark's level 5 show. And then we were, I think we've talked about how we both got involved in Thrilling. You can find that story elsewhere, mm-hmm. but that was really where we spent more and more time together. And now here we are, inseparable. Yeah.
Exactly.
Let's see. What do we have next? Oh, this is a Annie McGow. Is it McGow or McGuff? I've said them both. If you could do another podcast with each other, what would the topic be? So what other kind of podcast could we do together? Also, in a WGT movie, who would play Mark and who would play Hal? I think a fun other podcast to do, and we've talked about doing this as a bonus thing, is like a Nichols and May type improvised audio.
Yeah.
Piece.
Yeah. I would love to do some improvisations with you.
I think that would be fun.
It's always fun improvising together. Yeah. To do something fictional.
Yeah.
Fictional and improvised would be fun. Also, just based on the constraints of this show, I think that we could have another show that's just Hal and I, but it's just us talking about politics and swearing.
In a different religious institution.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, every episode we covered the topic of what's the best religion.
Yeah.
Which we haven't done in a while. We haven't done that bit in a while, but that bit always, for our whole like first year of the show, that bit made me laugh. I always wanted to do the topic, best religion, and you always shut it down.
Who do you want to play you in the We Got This movie?
Me.
Yeah, I want to play myself too.
Yeah. Guys, we're in SAG. We are screen actors and we need health insurance.
Do you think we're not available?
Yeah.
Is that what this is about, Annie? We're both available. Like, we'll
come on,
do
Annie. Are you casting this movie, Annie?
Yeah.
Look, I know it's really tempting to get George Clooney and Brad Pitt to play the two of us. But look, we can do it. We know us better than they know us. I mean, they know us pretty well, but we know us better.
That's true. Oh, boy, here's one. I can't believe this story has never been told. Maybe it has, but we're going to tell it now. Lucy what? Perrott asks, have you ever lost an episode? Congrats on 300. Let me set the
Hal?
Stage for you. Yeah. I think this was in 2016. We were both in, well, you were living in New York at the time, and I was in town to do Night Vale, and there was a blizzard that made it almost impossible. The second show was canceled, but we got one show that was that we did. And at the time I had this big portable mixing board.
Yeah.
That I was using to record stuff on because I'd seen it at San Francisco Sketchfest, and I was constantly looking for what equipment can I use to not only be portable, but to make it sound the best possible. I want to be able to control our levels because Mark has he projects better than I do. I have a little bit thinner voice or just different, our voices sit in different places. So I got this thing.
You're missing a word, by the way. This is a new thing that you've got.
This is new. And like a lot of technology I inherited from my father, just the ability to know how things work without using the manual. So we set up three records for that day. One with Joseph Fink doing best French fry cut. One with Jeffrey Craner doing best movie snack. And one with Cecil Baldwin doing coffee or tea. We recorded Joseph first, then Jeffrey. Then Cecil. In the sequence that I pressed buttons, because I didn't know how to do it and I learned later, I had to look it up. We recorded the Joseph episode, then recorded the Jeffrey episode over the Joseph episode, then recorded the Cecil episode over the Jeffrey episode over the Joseph episode. So that episode, that coffee versus tea episode was supposed to be one of a series of Night Vale records that we did not get to complete. And now we should record with Joseph.
We absolutely
since had Jeffrey on the show.
Since you ruined our Night Vale WGT turducken.
I ruined the turducken. I ruined the chirpumple. I ruined the turducken.
Oh, man, the chirpumple. I haven't talked about a chirpumple in a while. Can we tell people what a chirpumple is?
Yeah, go ahead.
A chirpumple is the dessert version of a turducken. It is a 3-tier cake, and inside each of the tiers of the cake is an entire pie.
Yes.
A cherry, a pumpkin, and an apple. So it's like an apple pie inside of a vanilla cake,
pumpkin pie inside
of a spice cake, and a cherry pie inside of a chocolate cake.
Yeah.
And it is magical.
Charles Phoenix, who's the guy who popularized the recipe via YouTube video, he's a fantastic Americana expert. He released a cookbook that I just bought for the holidays that includes the Trepumple recipe.
What?
In fact, the book is like built on the front. It says, we have the Trepumple recipe. It's in there.
Oh, my God. That's such a complicated recipe because it's literally six recipes that you have to do in their entirety.
They're pre-made. It's cake mixes and pre-made, but you still have to ice it and make it. And it's incredibly heavy because the pies pies are heavy things.
Yeah. Pies are dense.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know why that deserved such a long and final period at the end of the sentence. Pies are dense.
I'll tell you what we're going to do. That's a great place to take a break. So we're going to do that. We actually have sponsors on this show now, and we have cool sponsors. Every sponsor you hear on this show, we have approved.
Yeah.
Like, we have said, yes, we will advertise with these people. And hopefully they're things that you need or want to use. You checking them out helps us as well. So you're going to listen to some actual ads that we've recorded for things that we actually believe in. And you're going to hear about some great shows on the Maximum Fun Network. And then we'll be back to answer more of your questions.
This episode of We Got This with Mark and Hal is brought to you by Magic Spoon. Not only is it something that we are lucky to have as a sponsor, this is something that Hal knows this, legit obsessed with, and have already killed off 4 boxes.
Yes, me too. I love cereal, and I love that it's healthy and an alternative to all the sugar cereals that I wanted as a kid but shouldn't have as an adult. Magic Spoon has 0 sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net grams of carbs in each serving. And it comes in 4 fantastic flavors that we got to try, which is cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. Mark, what's your favorite real quick?
Hal, I keep going back and forth. I know I said last time I thought fruity was going to be my favorite, and then blueberry turned out to be my favorite. 2 boxes later, I think I've changed my mind. I think fruity is now my favorite because it evokes a special moment from my childhood.
It was a trick question. They're all fantastic. It's also keto-friendly, gluten-free, grain-free, soy-free, low-carb, and GMO-free. Go to magicspoon.com/wegotthis to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code WEGOTTHIS at checkout to get free shipping. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money. No questions asked. But you're not going to do it. It's too good.
No, it's delicious. That's magicspoon.com/wegotthis. Use the code WEGOTTHIS for free shipping. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring the podcast.
Well, hello. I'm Renee Colvert.
Hi, I'm Alexis Preston, and we are the hosts of Can I Pet Your Dog?
And we got breaking news, we got an expose, and all the beans have been spilled via an Apple Podcast review that said, this show isn't well-researched. Well, yeah, no duh. Of course it's not. Not since the day we started has it been well-researched. Guessing and anthropomorphizing dogs is what we do.
The Can I Pet Your Dog promise is that we will never do more than 10 seconds of research before telling you excitedly about any dog we see.
I'm going to come at you with top 10 enthusiasm, minimal facts.
We're here for a good time, not an educated time.
So if you love dogs and you don't love research, well, you know what? Come on in to Can I Pet Your Dog podcast every Tuesday on Maximum Fun Network.
We Got This is supported in part by Libby. Libby is a free reading app created by Overdrive that lets you borrow ebooks and audiobooks from your library on your phone, tablets, Kindle, or computers. All you need is a valid library card from your library. Even if you don't have a library card currently, you can read samples of any book you see. Libby works just like your physical library, too. You simply borrow available books you want to read, and then they return themselves automatically after your loan expires. Mark, you've been a Libby user for years. I'm getting on the train once they joined. I was like, I didn't even realize this was possible. How great is it?
It's wonderful. I've been using Libby for years, and you know how the library is like, you think, oh, I'll go to the bookstore and get this book. And then you go, wait, I can just go to the library and borrow it for free. And libraries are kind of the greatest idea of all time. Libby is just the digital version of that. So instead of buying books and filling up my Kindle with purchased books, I can now fill up my Kindle and have been filling up my Kindle with books that I checked out from the library. I read them, I finish them, I give them back. It is a sharing economy, and this is the best version of sharing that I've come across.
Start reading with Libby now. Go to meet.libbyapp.com to sign up. That's meet.libbyapp.com. Get on the reading train, people. Woot, woot. Okay, let's jump right in.
Oh, how was your break, Hal?
It was good.
Yeah?
I had a little nap.
Ooh. That was short because we rolled right through into this.
I've been practicing macro napping.
Ooh.
Macro napping that I'm
macro napping. Macro napping is
Kathleen Cashman
just sleeping all the time.
Yeah, I'm constantly in a state of slumber. I'm inceptioning myself right now as I record. Kathleen Cashman asks, first Kathleen Cashman says, congrats, and then asks, who does more research ahead of discussion, you or Mark? And then shout out to Kate McManus for doing the most/best research. So we'll start with the conceit that we wanted to work on when we were assigning roles. Was that you would be the researched one and I would shoot from the hip. But that comes from you wanting to do a you don't like to go into things blind. So you
I'm going to be honest. I did not know that that was ever codified.
You said that. That was something you expressed.
Yeah. I think it just sort of happened that way. I tend to go down internet rabbit holes for no reason other than curiosity a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think I have a tendency to want to learn about things. Like I remember when we did an episode, should chili have beans or not? I was like, Hal, nobody discusses this. This is not there's no way we're going to get a whole episode out of this topic. And Hal's like, trust me. So I started researching it and boy, is there a dense history of chili and whether or not it should have beans in it. So I'd say between the two of us, I do more research, but really the researcher for the show is Kate McManus.
Yes.
She's the one that she will give us, like when I do research, it's just me having a bunch of tabs opened that I've half memorized and sort of scanning between them while we're in the middle of recording an episode. With Kate, we have a spreadsheet and we have things broken down by categories and it makes it makes recording an episode a lot easier because we have not a script, but we have at least a structure. Because it provides not only research for the show, but the spreadsheet provides structure for what criteria we choose. So a lot of times when we talk about criteria on the show, like what are we going to use to weigh this decision against this one? The criteria we're using are just the table headers that Kate gave us.
That's right. And if you want to know what really goes into all that research, here's Kate to explain it herself.
Hey, people of the world. It's me, researcher Kate McManus. I've been researching for Mark and Hal for about 5 years, and since then you've had some questions about that process, so we thought for this mailbag I should take a crack at those. First up, Sarah Larson. I got involved with the show by responding to a tweet of Hal's, which I do pretty often, and then I followed up with an email that I probably wrote about 6 times and an offer to share my resume. I was just at a library school, and despite working 2 part-time jobs, I was afraid that I was never going to become a librarian. I was very happy when they said yes to having me pinch hit behind the scenes. Nowadays, if they know a topic in advance, I'll get an email from Hal, and we'll talk about how he and Mark would like to have that research structured, and if they have any criteria or categories that they need me to cover. I'll do a major first pass in Google Drive to get things as complete as possible. Generally speaking, it doesn't take me too long. I think best Oscar film took me the longest, to be honest. Then I send the link to the doc or sheet to Hal, and they go through and make sure I don't miss anything. Moving right along. Hi, Gretchen. I see you. Gretchen asked a bunch of questions that have been posed over the years, so here we go. The next question is about favorite research topics. I never really know what I'm going to get from Hal, which is kind of the fun of it. But one topic that's really memorable was our ghost reel, which became one of my favorite episodes to research. The stories and the property listings and those kind of spiritualistic movements I find really interesting. And it's probably one of my favorite episodes to re-listen to. My least favorite episode to research was Best Fictional President. I did it, and I did it without complaining because I'm not a baby. But the timing of it, I was already feeling very bruised. And seeing that there hadn't been very many female characters in the role of president that hadn't been vice president first was really eye-opening to me. Also, for Spiders versus Snakes, I had to ask my librarian friend Kirsten Menzer to do the snake portion, which thankfully the guys were cool with because I have a phobia of snakes. The next question is if I have any advice for aspiring researchers. So in my day job, I teach Introduction to Library Research. So I could answer this question for about 90 minutes up to 2 hours, but I'm not going to do that today. I will spare you. But the long and short of it is it's a lot of brainstorming. I'm not doing academic work or academic research for We Got This. So generally, I ask Hal what he and Mark are thinking about already, the sort of categories and criteria. And then I do some brainstorming about what we might be missing. I try and really think holistically about a topic and think about things from other people's perspectives that aren't straight white males. And looking for those gaps, I think, is really important. And, you know, I probably miss stuff too, for which I apologize. Usually I'm doing a lot of pop culture or fanish research, which I have a lot of experience of. So generally I head to fan sites to see what they're talking about, because I really strongly believe that nobody knows a topic like a fan. This really helps when I'm not familiar with the fandom. So I hope that answers that question. You can let me know. The final question is if there are any topics that I would love to provide research for. I sometimes find it hard to provide research for topics that I'm passionate about because I don't want my opinions to sway the show in any way. So for example, I recently helped with best background Star Wars character. And since Joseph helped me out with that research, I made some assumptions about the kinds of characters that he noticed and decided to go in and add a lot of prequel characters. Most of you know I have really strong feelings about Star Wars, so I really have to button that up when I do the research for the show. Yeah, that said, if there are any specifically library science topics, they know who to call. But that research might be a little bit more biased because I'm dealing with those issues every day. So I think that's about it for me. I've had a lot of fun with this community over the years, and I'm really grateful to be a part of it. Thank you, people of the world. Thank you. And thank you to Hal, Mark, and Ken. So that's all from me, except to say, wear your masks, be safe, and happy holidays.
Thank you, Kate, for that enlightening drop-in that you pre-recorded. You were not here with us.
Thank you. No. We wish you
okay.
Were.
So. Here, too, they're kind of related. First, I'll go from Rod Morrow. What work juice player that hasn't been on the show do you want to have on besides Padgett? Which one do you want back on? So I don't think there are any core work juice players that are left
that haven't, yeah,
that have not done the show. And including we've had some former work juice players. One we have not had on yet that we need to have on is James Urbaniak.
Yes. Absolutely.
And that is just a that really is on us. Every time we see him.
I know. We never.
Hello, boys. So we got to be recording. So we do need to record with James.
So that will, I would say before February, you will probably have an episode with James in it because now none of us are going anywhere. Are there any Thrilly Adventure Hour guests we have not? Cause we've had also some of the very notable guests that we've had on, we've been blessed with guests on Thrilly Adventure Hour who've also agreed to do We Got This, including Weird Al, Nathan Fillion, Zachary Levi is probably the latest example from that list. Is there somebody who has done Thrilling in any way that we have not yet had on? That would be a dream get. Cause there are other people. We haven't had Yuri or Tara on yet. We have to have them on. There's a long list that we have of people who we love, who are fabulously talented and wonderful people that we just haven't had on yet. And it's not.
And then there's a difference, I think, between people that we just want to talk to. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll give you one that I just want to talk to and one that I think because I know she has a bajillion opinions.
Okay.
One that I just want to talk to. I would love to have Emily Blunt on the show.
Yes.
Because she was just so kind. For those who don't know, she came into Thrilling Adventure Hour and was an absolute delight.
Yes.
And another one who is also incredibly kind, but I love following her on Twitter because she's hilarious and super opinionated, is Yvette Nicole Brown.
Oh, my goodness.
To have Yvette on this show, she has opinions about everything. And Ken just put one in the chat here that I don't know if I'd be able to handle it being the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan that I am without just asking a million questions about Phil Coulson. But to have Clark Gregg on the show.
We should try to have Clark Gregg on the show. There was a time in Thrilling, and I want to say it was around 2011, where we regularly had people from Community on the show. So that's Gillian Jacobs. Allison Brie did the show a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
And Danny Pudi. They all were there multiple times. We did shows with them in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. All of them, because they came from improv backgrounds and from ensemble backgrounds, were all the sweetest, easiest people to work with. Yvette came a little bit later. She also just so nice, so sweet, so wonderful. And we have not had any of those people on, and I would love to have any of them on anytime. I would also add to that list someone who I thought was great. You said Emily Blunt. She was fantastic. Ryan has also done the show, Ryan Johnson.
And
we've tried to schedule and have been unable to schedule him so far, but hopefully at some point. But also Emily's husband, John Krasinski, was such a cool dude. He also did that episode, and it'd be great to have him on. Let's tag on to that. Dave Hoffman, who is your dream guest whom you doubt would ever do the show?
Barack Obama.
That's mine too.
Yeah. Barack Obama.
For sure. So Barack. Easy.
Barack, if you're listening. I'm sorry. No, no, no. This signifier apparently lasts for life.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. President.
Mr. President, please.
Please come on the show.
We're available. We'll get this together.
He does podcasts.
He does. That's time to do ours.
Exactly.
Okay. We got time for a couple more. All right. This is a good one. Anna Brecky, or Anna Breck, asks, what's your favorite episode and why?
Oh, wow. I think my favorite episode is the one that we recorded live in San Francisco at Sketchfest, because we were talking about Star Trek versus Star Wars, which is a sort of a seminal binary choice and perfectly in line with the premise of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we had Adam Savage as our guest, who has worked on both properties and dropped some really, really cool science about the differences between Star Trek and Star Wars. And then we had an amusingly belligerent John Hodgman storm in halfway through the episode and then drop more science on us definitively in a way that only the wonderful joy that is John Hodgman can do.
Yeah, that was a great episode. We have a ton of great guest episodes. My two favorites, one is the liquid versus bar versus foam soap, just because it went so off the rails. My favorites are and it's I always recommend it to people who aren't familiar with the show. And it's a weird thing to recommend, because why is that a topic that anybody would care about? And maybe they don't. You have opinions on it, even if you don't think you do. But I just love – we had so much fun doing it, and we were just on a roll and kind of in the pocket, and everything clicked. The other one, just because it was so crazy, was the best as seen on TV product, because it revolved around Papa Bernard, the mashed potatoes.
Oh God, mashed potatoes guy. Yeah.
And it was just ridiculous, and we laughed and had a great time. And that was us in person with one another. And I just love when we're together in a room, the energy is different. Because we're both so excited to be together. And I mean, like, you dropped off a blue screen to me recently, and I gave you Werther's candies.
You did, which are, oh man, I'm not going to lie, almost gone.
Good. I'm glad that's what they're supposed to be. It was so almost good. Gone.
But Werther's, choose, people, choose.
It's so difficult to see you in person, and you're in your car, and I'm standing an appropriate distance away, and not want to rip you out of the car and give you a big hug. It's like,
I know,
impossible.
It sucks. Ugh.
And very painful. So I look forward to the time when we can be in a room together again recording. Because it's
different. I mean,
different.
We can. The pandemic's a hoax.
Oh, that's right. We'll do it. Do you want to still have that sneezing contest?
Yes.
Okay.
The open mouth sneezing contest, though. The closed mouth sneezing contest is for wimps.
Exactly. All right. Carla Toll asks, how much time per week do you spend on We Got This? Hal, I know you work a full-time job plus at least three podcasts. Do you sleep? I sleep a little bit. I think I sleep like 5 to 6 hours per night. That's sort of where I've settled.
That's it?
Yeah. If I go to bed, I'll give you an example. This Friday night, I think I went to bed around – Jennifer and I went to bed at like 9 or 10. I was just wiped out. Mm-hmm. I woke up at 3:30 in the morning, yesterday morning.
And just started your day?
Sleep. That was it. I thought I could go back to sleep. I went out into the living room because I figured I'd watch a movie or something and have like something with a little sound on my iPad. And I thought maybe I'll go back to sleep. And I couldn't. I was just up. So last night I went to bed at 11 and then woke up at like 6. So I got about 7 hours there.
All right.
But that's about where I settle in. In terms of work, Ken does the lion's share. He is editing and doing everything. So I spend – my time is literally the uploading and then just posting it in different places. So it's not a lot. Recording-wise, most of what you hear – if an episode is an hour long, we probably recorded it for about an hour 15 with all the little things that Ken cuts out to make it sound as tight as possible. So it's really just the whatever the recording time is in a week. Plus the 20 to 30 minutes it takes to post.
The amount of time I spend is mostly just the recording time. Shamefully, I do the least amount of outside work. That's not true. The researching I like to dabble in. But yeah, it's all Ken doing all the homework on the back end.
Yeah. Okay. Three more and then we're done. I promise.
Cool. I'm here, man.
I know. Leo Genicek, or Genicek, asks, other than the one true faith, i.e. best religion, is there any topic or are there any topics that you've rejected? I can only think of one that you've rejected that is a clean slate topic. Because yeah, you didn't want to go back to the bathroom.
It's just bathroom humor. And it was, yeah, it was one of those like, I think that we can do better. Like,
but we can't. What if we can't?
I think it was something about how do you wipe?
Yeah.
It was like standing or sitting, or was it like front to back or
no, whatever. I think it was, I think people are very, we've really tapped.
Whatever into, it was, it was super gross.
Yeah. We've really tapped into wipe culture.
Yeah.
And people want to know. These wipe things, so, but we've stayed away from. I don't can't think of
that's
other
the
things.
Only topic that I was like, nah, let's just not do that because that just feels like base.
Yeah, even the stuff that would be political, which is like best president. Mm-hmm. We haven't done worst president. That would be definitely political, but we did best past president to
explain. I would also be pretty timely.
Exactly. So
we have to throw a little bit in. I just get a little bit.
I know you do. I'm right there with you. But I can't think of other things we've rejected. This kind of falls into lost episode territory, which is when we did best Dorito flavor and I bought all the different variety. I bought every variety of Dorito I could find. I think I went to multiple stores to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you were so concerned about us eating on microphone that you forbid us from, you didn't want it released. I even negotiated the release of another episode.
Yeah.
By saying we wouldn't release this one. And then Ken was like, I've taken out all the chewing. Ken was the one who kept pushing, like, it's a good episode.
For me, it's just, I'm very anti-chewing. I guess, you know, you've like taken mic technique classes and stuff. Like, that is rule number one. As I say, as I've sat here drinking wine, and you're currently drinking coffee while I'm talking. Like,
it's water.
Oh, all right. I was drinking my water out of a bottle or whatever. But like the idea of chewing and crunching deliberately on a mic, it really bothers me. So that was the only one that I didn't want dropped.
And then we fixed it.
Yeah.
So we could make it out. It didn't need the crunching. Yeah. It's almost better to have you upset about the crunching and then no crunching in the episode.
I know. I think I spent half the episode just going, I'm doing this under protest.
Yeah. Q40A. And also Loki.
Hey, happy birthday, Q.
Happy belated birthday, Q.
Belated birthday. By the way, did you see the ultimate video of
his
birthday?
Not seen the ultimate video yet.
You and I are by far the least famous people on that video. It's unlike, oh my God, everyone Q knows is a all-star. This is like a Comic-Con all-star team.
He's the most connected person on the planet.
It's fascinating.
Except for Ken. Ken and Mel Kalo are the three most connected people that I know.
And Kevin Bacon.
Well, come on. Kevin Bacon is the axis of the universe. Q4Day, also Loki Cabri asked this. How did the idea of the podcast come up and how did it come to be? I'll give the quick answer on this, which is we were told, I think, 6 months. We were told a few months ahead of when it was announced and about a year before the Only Adventure Hour ended that it was ending. Acker and Blacker took us out in pairs to a meal to tell us. I was paired with Craig. Who were you paired with? Annie?
I was paired with Annie.
Yeah. So I realized as it was closing that I wanted to, that there was an opportunity. There are people who are fans of Thrilling Adventure Hour. If I started my own thing, maybe some of them would come and follow me if I had something good to do. Also, you were moving to New York. I didn't want to lose contact with you. So I basically like grabbed you off the decks of the Titanic and said, hey, we should do a show. Here's the idea. And you were, of course, amenable because you're just an agreeable person. And that was, I'd had that idea for a show. I thought it would be a good idea and you were into it and that's really like all it was.
Yeah. And it just sort of from there, we just kind of enjoyed doing it. And then, you know, it's been going since then. I think, let me ask you a question, Hal.
Yeah.
I may be because I think this word is perfect to describe our show, but I know you don't drink. Am I the only one between the two of us that refers to our show as settling barguments?
I use it sometimes, but only because you use it. And I think that's a good shorthand for what the show is.
Yeah. All
right. It's better than a more long-winded explanation that I would do, like when I was describing the cap of your bottle. But it also, this is like a lesson to everybody out there who has a podcast idea. We just started doing it.
Talking.
There's such a low barrier to entry. Just do it and start getting episodes out and you will figure it out as you go along. You can change formats. You can evolve the show.
You're going to learn. It'll sound better as you go. Listen to any podcast that you like. Go back and listen to the early episodes of it, and you'll hear people figuring out how to do their show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got a series from Jay McCracken. This is our second to last, but I'm squeezing a bunch in.
The penultimate series.
What/where is your happy place? That's number one. Number two, what did you have to give up to achieve your current level of success? That's number two. Number three, of what are you most afraid? So let's start.
This is going deep.
Let's go in reverse. Let's start with what are you the most afraid of? I can answer this. I have an answer to this.
Okay.
I have constant anxiety about the decisions I make. The thing I'm most afraid of is that nobody likes me and I'm not any good at anything. And everybody who says differently is just trying to placate me, which it doesn't even jibe. This is part of what I discuss in therapy, is like working through these feelings. But if nobody likes you, then why would they care that you feel good by telling you that you're good at something? So it's really like that self-doubt that I think plagues a lot of people who are performers. Those are my biggest fears, and spiders. I'm afraid of spiders.
I think it's similar for me. I think like my biggest fear is the idea that I am hurting somebody. But like it weirdly permeates a lot of things, which is why I'm so rarely on Facebook or like a lot of social media stuff. And it's not, and you and I've talked about this. I'm just going to air some of it here. It's because, and I know that there are settings I can change and all this stuff. And I just sort of got, the reason I got off of that train was I started having like friend requests start to pile up. Right. And I was like, oh, I need to go through these. And cause some of them are people I know. Some of them are people that I know peripherally. I'd like to be able to go through these and sort them. That's going to be a sit down and do it kind of thing. But then I got into my head like, oh no, I can't post anything or even like a picture, because what if somebody who I not accepted a friend request from yet, what if they see that and then they think that I am in some way insulting them? So I guess it's, my fear is not like hurting people, not that I aspire to hurt people, but my biggest fear is like insulting someone and then them not wanting to talk to me anymore.
Right.
Which is, you know, what it is, but also nail files. I can't be in the same room as a nail file.
I know.
My stepmother once took a nail file and put it inside a Christmas card. And that was my Christmas card, was a nail file, an emery board inside a Christmas card.
Oh, yeah.
She's funny. Pain in the ass, but funny.
I do want to add to this just very quickly. There's a difference between having those fears, which a lot of us have, those reservations, those insecurities, and letting those things stop you from going after what you want or improving and getting better as a person and just making it through life. So it's okay to have fears and continue to work through them. Like, I don't let any of that stop me. I keep going. And that's something that I remind myself of. And that has helped immensely. You know, it's something I've worked on that I feel way better about now than I did when I started to work on it. So there's hope for all of us.
Amen.
What did you have to give up to achieve your current level of success? I don't think about it in terms of sacrifice. And maybe, I guess some of the things that you give up are working. And I have worked a stable job for almost 11 years.
Yeah.
At one place, which I'm very grateful for. But you're maybe giving up some of the trappings of a normal life. But I don't even think it was a sacrifice. I think of it as a privilege to get to do the things that I do. And every single step I've taken, whether it was in the right direction or the wrong direction, got me where I am now, which is great, and not even where I'm ultimately going.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, I agree with you completely on that. You have a more stable life than I do. Like that's a lot of personal stuff too. Like, you know, you're married. You've got Jen there with you. You've got a steady job. I just kind of go with the flow of things work wise, which, you know, can be a solitary road to go down. So I think that having that artist experience, I guess that's been what's the trade-off has been. I haven't had the normal life of, you know, the 2.3 kids, the white picket fence, the steady job, the, you know, a lot of the stuff that you see actors and writers and directors create as what a normal life should look like and the things that you should be aspiring toward on television and movies, I've aimed more toward being in the television and movies and not toward those things. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Well, let's end this question on a happy note.
I know. It's such a, like, we went straight to therapy for
it. Is. Well, I mean, they're deep questions.
I'm happy
what
to answer.
Slash where is your happy place?
Epcot World Showcase.
Okay. Good one. Good one.
I realize that has nothing to do with friends and family and being together. No, man. I love Epcot. I love going to all those fake countries.
Honestly, mine, I always feel really charged every time I'm there as a recording booth. Whether it's for a workshop or especially for a job, I feel comfortable. I feel like it's where I'm supposed to be. And I just come out of it feeling like for a time, I've lived my ideal life, even whether it was for a couple hours or for a couple of days, just doing that, even being on set, any kind of creative work like that, that feels, it always feels right to me and it makes me really happy and that can fuel me for months and months.
All right.
We're going to close this episode with our friend Shelly Godifrin. You couldn't have
Shelly.
An episode without Shelly.
No.
Checking in. Shelly asks, when I was a reporter, I ended every feature article interview with this question. So that's how we're going to end this episode. What
Great.
Is the one thing you'd like your fans to know that they don't already know?
The depth of my gratitude for them. And I'm sorry I don't show it enough via availability and like I mentioned before, but I think that we are nothing without fans as artists. We like, you can paint on a cave wall, but somebody's got to look at that cave painting and see a mammoth. You know what I mean? I think it's the depth of the gratitude that I have for the audience is one thing that I would hope that the audience knows.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. And so rather than go over that, I don't know if it's something that I need people to know, but I want to go with that. I feel like you can always get into a space of like, I'm not the characters that I play or anything like that, but I'm so appreciative of all the support that I've gotten for anything I've done, whether it's this show or everything since Thrilling Adventure, the extent to which you are supportive of both of us individually as well as in the show is unfathomable, and how much it means, how special all of you are as people, and that you give your time or any of your attention to us, and the extent that you do is deeply, deeply appreciated.
Amen.
And we also appreciate you sticking, those of you who have been here since episode one, being here. Oh my goodness. Those of you who are brand new, hope you're catching up and enjoying some of your favorite episodes. This show does not happen without all of you. And a special thanks to our producer, Ken Plume.
Happy 300th show, Ken Plume.
Thank you. Thank you for this. I hope we kept it close enough to an hour that you don't lose your mind trying to edit this together. Also want to thank our researcher, Kate McManus, who has been here since practically the beginning. Graphic designer, Uri Kelman, who gave us the logo that we have. The first draft logo was done by Mark, and then Uri, who is a professional graphic designer, came in and made one that even topped that, that has been our logo for 5+ years. And our QA engineer, Jen Albo, another great friend of mine and former coworker who would listen to all those early episodes to let us know when there are errant swear words in them.
And of course, we have to thank our musicians, Jonathan Dinerstein, who wrote the underscoring music at the top when you hear Hal give our big A-Team intro. And of course, Mike Furman, who knocked it out of the park with our theme song. We could not have asked for a better theme song. I think we have the best theme song in all of podcasting.
No question.
No question. And that is all Mike Furman. And you can hear the music of both of these gentlemen coming up in our concert and live show, our public domain holiday spectacular, which is happening December 10th at 9 p.m. Eastern time and 6 p.m. Pacific time.
That's right. Thank you so much for being a part of this show.
And that just leaves us to say thank you to the people of the world who have stuck with us this whole time. Without you, we wouldn't have a show. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. For Hal Loveland, I'm Mark Gagliardi.
For Mark Gagliardi, I'm Hal Loveland. And don't worry, everybody. We got this.
We got this.
Happy 100th episode, buddy.
300.
Wait, what?
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.